Random House Audio presents The Gods Themselves by Isaac Asimov. Read for you by Scott Brick. To mankind, and the hope that the war against folly may someday be won after all. Part 1. Against Stupidity. Section 6. Author's Note. The story starts with Section 6. This is not a mistake. I have my own subtle reasoning. So, just listen and enjoy. No good, said Lamont sharply. I didn't get anywhere. He had a brooding look about him that went with his deep-set eyes and the slight asymmetry of his long chin. There was a brooding look about him at the best of times, and this was not the best of times. His second formal interview with Hallam had been a greater fiasco than the first. Don't be dramatic, said Myron Bronowski placidly. You didn't expect to. You told me that. He was tossing peanuts into the air and catching them in his plump-lipped mouth as they came down. He never missed. He was not very tall, not very thin. That doesn't make it pleasant. But you're right, it doesn't matter. There are other things I can do and intend to do, and besides that, I depend on you. If you could only find out. Don't finish, Pete. I've heard it all before. All I have to do is decipher the thinking of a non-human intelligence. A better-than-human intelligence. Those creatures from the para-universe are trying to make themselves understood. That may be, sighed Bronowski. But they're trying to do it through my intelligence, which is better than human, I sometimes think, but not much. Sometimes, in the dark of the night, I lie awake and wonder if different intelligences can communicate at all, or if I've had a particularly bad day, whether the phrase different intelligences has meaning at all. It does, said Lamont savagely, his hands clearly balling into fists within his lab coat pockets. It means Hallam and me. It means that fool hero, Dr. Frederick Hallam and me. We're different intelligences, because when I talk to him, he doesn't understand. His idiot face gets redder, and his eyes bulge, and his ears block. I'd say his mind stops functioning, but I lack the proof of any other state from which it might stop. Bronowski murmured, what a way to speak of the father of the electron pump. That's it. Reputed father of the electron pump. A bastard birth, if ever there was one. His contribution was least in substance. I know. I know, too. You've told me often. And Bronowski tossed another peanut into the air. He didn't miss. Section 1. It had happened 30 years before. Frederick Hallam was a radiochemist, with the print on his doctoral dissertation still wet and with no sign whatever of being a world-shaker. What began the shaking of the world was the fact that a dusty reagent bottle marked tungsten metal stood on his desk. It wasn't his. He had never used it. It was a legacy from some dim day when some past inhabitant of the office had wanted tungsten for some long-forgotten reason. It wasn't even really tungsten anymore. It consisted of small pellets of what was now heavily layered with oxide, gray and dusty. No use to anyone. And one day Hallam entered the laboratory. Well, it was October 3rd, 2070, to be exact. Got to work, stopped shortly before 10 a.m., stared transfixed at the bottle, and lifted it. It was as dusty as ever, the label as faded. But he called out, God damn it! Who the hell has been tampering with this? That, at least, was the account of Dennison, who overheard the remark and who told it to Lamont a generation later. The official tale of the discovery, as reported in the books, leaves out the phraseology. One gets the impression of a keen-eyed chemist, aware of change and instantly drawing deep-seated deductions. Not so. Hallam had no use for the tungsten. It was of no earthly value to him, and any tampering with it could be of no possible importance to him. However, he hated any interference with his desk, as so many do, and he suspected others of possessing keen desires to engage in such interference out of sheer malice. No one at the time admitted to knowing anything about the matter. Benjamin Allen Dennison, who overheard the initial remark, had an office immediately across the corridor, and both doors were open. He looked up and met Hallam's accusatory eye. He didn't particularly like Hallam. No one particularly did, and he had slept badly the night before. He was, as it happened, and as he later recalled, rather pleased to have someone on whom to vent his spleen, and Hallam made the perfect candidate. When Hallam held the bottle up to his face, Dennison pulled back with clear distaste. "Why the devil should I be interested in your tungsten?" he demanded. "Why should anyone? If you'll look at the bottle, you'll see that the thing hasn't been opened for 20 years, and if you hadn't put your own grubby paws on it, you would have seen no one had touched it." Hallam flushed a slow, angry red. He said tightly, "Listen, Dennison, someone has changed the contents. That's not the tungsten." Dennison allowed himself a small but distinct sniff. "How would you know?" Of such things, petty annoyance and aimless thrusts, is history made. It would have been an unfortunate remark in any case. Dennison's scholastic record, as fresh as Hallam's, was far more impressive, and he was the bright young man of the department. Hallam knew this, and what was worse, Dennison knew it too, and made no secret of it. Dennison's "how would you know," with the clear and unmistakable emphasis on the "you," was ample motivation for all that followed. Without it, Hallam would never have become the greatest and most revered scientist in history, to use the exact phrase Dennison later used in his interview with Lamont. Officially, Hallam had come in on that fateful morning, noticed the dusty gray pellets gone, not even the dust on the inside surface remaining, and clear iron-gray metal in their place. Naturally, he investigated, but placed the official version to one side. It was Dennison. Had he confined himself to a simple negative or a shrug, the chances are that Hallam would have asked others, then eventually wearied of the unexplained event, put the bottle to one side and let subsequent tragedy, whether subtle or drastic, depending on how long the ultimate discovery was delayed, guide the future. In any event, it would not have been Hallam who rode the whirlwind to the heights. With the "how would you know" cutting him down, however, Hallam could only retort wildly, "I'll show you that I know." And after that, nothing could prevent him from going to extremes. The analysis of the metal in the old container became his number one priority, and his prime goal was to wipe the haughtiness from Dennison's thin-nosed face and the perpetual trace of a sneer from his pale lips. Dennison never forgot that moment, for it was his own remark that drove Hallam to the Nobel Prize, and himself to oblivion. He had no way of knowing, or if he knew, he would not then have cared, that there was an overwhelming stubbornness in Hallam, the mediocrity's frightened need to safeguard his pride, that would carry the day at that time more than all Dennison's native brilliance would have. Hallam moved at once. And directly. He carried his medal to the mass spectrography department. as a radiation can-
Sample complete. Ready to continue?